Meanwhile, heartbreak for Daly's Dubs in the Hurling Championship as the Rebels progress to the All-Ireland Final. Clare will battle it out with Limerick in the other semi-final, while Michael Ryan steps down as Waterford boss. This is Talking GAA. I'm Dave O'Grady. If you want to email the programme, you can do so. It's theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. You can check us out on Twitter. It's @theworldstalking without the G at the end, or just search for Dave O'Grady. I should be the first one that comes up. And you can get us on Facebook. We're The World's Talking. So check us out. Tell us what you think about the programme. I'm delighted to be joined on the programme by Emmett Ryan of Action81.com and freelance GAA correspondent Colleen Duffy. Lads, you're very welcome to the programme. Emmett, to come to yourself first, looking back on what is most definitely being described as the game of the year, Cork's win over Dublin. I know the main dominant argument in the game was, of course, the red card to Ryan O'Dwyer. What was your taking of it? Firstly, the game itself, a terrific game of hurling.
Yeah, it was extraordinary stuff. 19 different scorers. They're level 15 times the two sides, Dave. Like, that's just extraordinary stuff to see. And like, they were battling it out the whole way through as well. Because I remember early in the first half, they were on course at one point for 50 scores in the game. Didn't quite hit that, but that was an insane pace of death. And it didn't let up too far from that as the game wore on.
Indeed it did. Colleen, to come to yourself on this match, I'd say it was one you yourself enjoyed. Ryan O'Dwyer red card, a serious talking point. A lot of people seem to be saying the first yellow, I think in the second minute of the match, was really the controversial one.
A controversial decision indeed, and I suppose no one would question the fact that Ryan O'Dwyer was unlucky and that Liam Rush was very lucky. Liam Rush has a great reputation as a player, but he did swing out awkwardly on Sunday afternoon. But Ryan O'Dwyer, speaking on News Talk tonight, said he'd no qualms by the referee's decision. So that's just a mark of the man that is Ryan O'Dwyer, but certainly he'll have to feel deep down that an injustice was done against him last Sunday afternoon.
What about Cork, Emmett? Jimmy Barry Murphy has set his sights well. They've really developed in every single game. Lehan was criticised for not putting away scores, I think, early on in the championship. People really didn't think they had the full package, but my God, he has them working harder than ever.
Yeah, it was a great performance, Dave. No question of that. Like, just to get in the red card for a second, I think Colleen's spot on. Like, Ryan O'Dwyer probably wasn't even a free for the first defence in all seriousness, never mind that yellow card. But at the same time, Dublin were lucky to not be down a man before O'Dwyer was sent off, because Liam Rush really should have gone. Like, and I say that as a Dublin fan, very biased, that, like, you know, much as like I'd like Dublin to have finished 15 players, he probably deserved to finish at 14. But I don't think the man down was really the difference in the end, Dave. Right? You could see in the second half, especially early on, And apart from that real rally Dublin had in the mid-second half to go ahead briefly by 2 points, Cork were beating Dublin to a lot of ball. They were playing a lot smarter. They were seeing where Dublin were trying to move the ball into Cork territory, whereas Dublin's defence wasn't getting on ball as easy, really, as the Cork backs were. And that to me was a huge difference. Like, Cork were better at getting the ball to the forwards when they moved it upfield. Cork's defence was shutting down a lot better, because in the first half, neither defence was on top. Both defences were pretty rubbish. Well, not rubbish, sorry. They were both trying very hard. Both forward sets were really, really in command in the first half. And you needed one side to step up defensively. And I think even though it was a high-scoring game, Cork clearly showed they had the better defence at the end of the day.
What about the tactics? I'll put this to yourself, Colleen. When Dublin had the man sent off, it seemed like the Dubs were still holding the player back when they needed to get ahead. They needed to get the ball up. They were still going with only 4 attackers and they were pinned back by 6 Cork defenders. Was that not the wrong tactic to make, especially when you have to go for it?
That's a trait that's really crept into Gaelic games, and I actually saw it on Saturday afternoon in Burr in a different code, where Meath were doing something similar against Laois in the Ladies Football Championship, and it didn't work out. And rightly, you point out, it didn't work out for Dublin against Cork last Sunday. It's something, I suppose, which probably rarely works out, and certainly when you're still doing that so late in the game as well, you really need to start thinking about changing tactics. But unusual in top-level Gaelic games that people don't make the right decisions. I mean, one thing Anthony Daly has to be praised for is the way he utilises his backroom team. My dad remarked to me during the summer of how He was in close proximity to Daly and the rest of his selectors during the Leinster final, close one of the rows near the front in the Hogan stand, and how Daly kept constantly going back to his selectors for opinions, different things. And then there's people further up in the stand watching on as well. But this time he got it wrong. It's proven very costly. But
I really wouldn't say I agree with you there, Colin, because... Like, they lost the game, so that's easier to say you got it wrong. But at the same time, you got to look at what was happening in the game when Daly decided to keep that extra man back. Dublin were having issues keeping out scores. Like, yeah, they needed to get scores, but at the same time, they only really needed to get two scores, and they realized they'd have to both be goals from a fairly early point in that last 5 minutes. The fear was that essentially Cork were going to get one more goal, which would kill the game, which really, if Dublin didn't keep that defender back, was more than likely to happen, because Dublin weren't closing down the Cork attack. So while it might have looked conservative in that respect, the way they were thinking was if they were going to gamble, it was the only way the gamble might pay off, is in it breaking from the back. But like, if they left that hole open, they were basically asking Cork to finish the game off before full time.
But one thing I would say about Dublin, and certainly the goal that Cork got, showed that Dublin were very much left exposed. And you could see, I watched the video back a couple of times, it went up on YouTube pretty quickly afterwards, that Peter Kelly was only trotting back. He left the gap exposed in the middle as well, and that maybe it wasn't all Gary Maguire's fault per se, although he will have memories of a similar challenge which left him injured in a championship match a few years ago. I think he managed to keep out a goal on that particular occasion, but certainly Dublin, there were certain players that didn't do enough at the back, even in the lead up to that Cork goal. And, you know, when it was coming so late on, there might have been a bit of panic. I won't say inexperience, because ironically, the Dublin panel at the moment actually has more experience than the Cork one of big games. But
and really, of any of the four teams that were left going into last weekend, like, because you could say the same for the two other semi-finalists.
That's pretty true. But I suppose where I'm talking about experience is, if you look at those Cork players, and the amount of them who are so young, Limerick have a bit more experience on board in terms of years under their belt in the championship as well. Dublin have that experience as well. And if you delve a bit further into the ranks, Limerick have some underage experience. Clare have plenty of it. And so too Dublin, but Cork have none.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, for Cork to do that with such a young squad is what's really been most impressive about their run this summer.
Totally.
Yeah, because like Colin saying, Cork's underage pedigree in recent years really is
shocking.
I was going to use really nice, flaky words, but Colin's pretty much spot on. It's shocking, like, you know, I was going to be diplomat for once. Normally, I'm the harsh guy.
Is that a real credit, Emmett, to Jimmy Barry Murphy and the job that he set out to do?
I think it is, because, like, the whole thing with underage things is, well, obviously winning is a very good sign, but so long as you're getting, you know, five or six good players through. I know, like, the old saying is you need to get two good players through. Really, from each group of players, you want to be getting five or six through who are getting into senior panels, which, you know, might sound like a high number for underage teams, but really, when you think about the attrition you're going to have from those players over the coming years, it's actually not like you're only two or three of those are going to make it through, but you need five or six who make an early impact at least. And like Cork, to be able to get that from such a great run of, well, great malaise basically they've had on underage levels, really is a credit to JBM, like, for what he's been able to do, recognizing the jobs players can do and how he can use them. And now essentially you could turn a bunch of guys who are used to losing into All-Ireland finalists.
Colleen, I suppose for Dublin now going forward, we've seen the disappointment last year when they were beaten in the qualifiers by Clare down in Ennis. It was really, I suppose, they had the wind knocked out of them, and they...
Not as bad as my own Laois getting knocked out to the same county and Clare posting a record 32 points in the championship earlier this summer.
Yeah, but what will the Dubs do now? I mean, obviously the big talking point will be about Anthony Daly. The players want him to stay. RTÉ seem to always ask the managers straight after the game when they're fresh and tensions are high. I mean, probably the wrong time to make a decision, but for Dublin Hurling, for Dublin Hurling, is it essential that he stays on?
I think so, but just to go back to an earlier point you made there in the question, it's not just RTÉ. I think as GA journalists, we're all kind of guilty of that question, will you stay or will you go after a big game and a big defeat? But
it's a legitimate question to ask, though, because the public wants the answer to that question at that
exactly.
time. You have to ask it.
Exactly. But I suppose, you know, it does come at a harsh time, and Dave has a point there too. But I just looking at Anthony Daly, you know, 6 years, and what he has achieved in that 6 years has been nearly more than Dublin Hurling has achieved in the last, I was going to say 50, but we'll say 40 to 50 years. And really, you know, you can't ask for much more than that. Maybe an All-Ireland senior title, obviously that'd be nice. But he's got them to two All-Ireland semi-finals in the space of 3 years. They've won the Division 1A Hurling League. They've won the Division 1B Hurling League. They've won the Leinster title. They've won the Walsh Cup. They've actually won everything bar the Liam McCarthy Cup, which is quite an achievement. And, you know, that's something that really has to be commended. 2 years ago, when Dublin lost their semi-final against Tipperary, Daly went on a bit of a soul-searching journey, so much so that he wasn't contactable to anybody over the few days after that game, including his family. But when he came back, he made his decision to stay on. And I suppose some would have said, after last year and the so-called dismal 12 months that Dublin Hurling had, well, really, you know, he'd throw in the towel after that. But fair play to him, he came back. I think he'll possibly stay on for another year. I mean, last year, you know, results-wise was disastrous, but you had to take into account the number of injuries that Dublin had last year as well. In the league, they were very unlucky in a number of matches. They drew with Tipperary, unlucky to lose to Waterford, and different things went against them. This year, everything going right, and I think in my heart and soul, like, this would be like Brian Cody walking away from Kilkenny after the year Kilkenny have had this year. I don't think it's going to happen. So I think Daly will stay on. But as they say, ask well, you get begle feckle. We'll have to wait and see.
Emmett, yourself, what do you reckon, Daly to stay?
Well, I think the big thing is that, like, because everybody, you can see how the players were after they lost, obviously, on Sunday. But, like, in the cold light of day, like, the breakthrough of winning the Leinster title this year was the big deal. Like, you know, a Liam McCarthy Cup or even the final would have been an enormous bonus. Like, winning Leinster was the absolute, like, sort of, you know, that was the holy grail break for a lot of Dublin Hurling fans. Because we went through such a long, long, long time without doing that. And considering how few counties compete, that's quite something. So, like, to get over that hump, like, psychologically, that's, frankly, that's more important than winning an All-Ireland semi-final. Like, if they'd beaten Tipperary 2 years ago, it wouldn't have been on the same scale as winning the Leinster title this year. So, like, you got so many of these dumb teams who are used to basically not getting done in their own local competition, and now they've shown they can. And frankly, once they get that far, suddenly they get into the mentality of, well, we can get to the next level. And they were very close against Cork on Sunday, and they know they let a chance slip by. And the fact that they were upset they lost is a great sign. As in that they were distraught they lost, sorry, is a great sign, because it shows that just how much belief they have in their own abilities to get to that next level. So I think if you look at that from, you know, with Anthony Daly, purely on a, you know, capacity as a manager and what he knows he can get from his team, he'd be crazy to leave. Like, the only real issue is, like, you know, what else Anthony Daly has going on in his life, because the one thing we always forget when we're discussing the future of managers is, like, you know, well, these guys do have jobs and families as well, you know. So, like, while, you know, for some guys it's easy to manage it around it, for others it's not quite as much of an, it's not quite as straightforward. Like, obviously, Pat Gilroy had to perform a very skilled act in managing his work commitments around being Dublin football manager.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like James Horan and Mountain Mayo as a young family, like, it'd be very surprising for me if he stays on at Mayo, whether they win some or not this year, because 3 years when you got a young family is a long time on the road with the team. A fourth year will be asking something. So while he might sound like off-the-pitch concerns, they have a very direct impact in whether the guy feels he has the commitment needed to manage a county team.
Well, in fairness to Anthony Daly, Dave, in fairness to Anthony Daly as well, he is travelling up and down from Clare constantly.
Exactly.
To train this Dublin team. He has a sports shop in Ennis. I know I passed by it a few times. I was down in Ennis last week ahead of the game this weekend, which we'll probably talk about in a minute. But yeah, life does come into play. And, you know, he does have a lot to juggle at the minute. And I know talking to him, and I've talked to him a number of times, and I sat down recently with him for a 15-minute interview, that, you know, he's not a man who takes things lightly. He comes from Clare. people like him, Davy Fitzgerald, Gerlach Nan, and plenty of others, Mike McNamara, and plenty of others besides him. You know, they're all deep thinking people, and he's not going to take whatever decision he makes lightly, and it'll be, I'm sure, for the good of him and also for the good of Dublin hurling at the end of it.
I am, if he fits, at least, like, you know, management is clearly an addiction for him. Like, he would, he, you know, he, if he ever loses the Clare gig, he'll manage Carlo or someone. Like, he's never quit.
No doubt about it, the love is always there in the heart. Emmett, you just mentioned, as a Dub, you were praising Anthony Daly and the job that he's done. I think a lot of Dublin hurling people will remember not so many years ago a battle against Westmead in Tullamore for a relegation dogfight. I think Dubs have come a long way.
Yeah, that's for sure. Like, we have to remember, like, where we are coming from. Like, now, it's obviously a lot of it's on the back of tremendous youth development. So the concern in Dublin, which sort of shows you the position we're in now, is we've had two bad years of underage teams in terms of what's come through. And really, it's only
by Leash and Carlo.
Yes, exactly. We've been losing to those guys.
Cut Colleen off quickly. Leash and Carlo and hurling at under 21's level. This year was a bad year for the minors as well. Like, obviously, last year we got to an All Ireland final, huge, putting it an understatement, and forced a replay as well. But that is a concern amongst a lot of people in Dublin right now, because this current senior team has come in the back of tremendous development at an underage level. And of course, our fear is if we have one or two bad years, that could undo some of the good work. So I suppose if we can even get past that in confidence level, because we've even seen with Kilkenny, like, they've had, by their lofty standards, 6 or 7 mediocre years at underage. I don't think Colin would be quite as harsh on them as he rightly is.
Kilkenny's first time not to be in an All-Ireland final at any grade since 2002.
Yeah, that's true, but like, I would say, but they're sure. I remember, like, I'm 32 now, Dave. From about getting old, but from about when I was 16 through to about when I was 26, Kilkenny had a run of like 10 straight Leinster minor titles. That's the level of dominance they really had underage. It was something like that, anyway. Now I might have the years off, but there were definitely 10 in a row. So, and that's what the core of this team has come from. Obviously with Dublin, we kind of look at that and we go, well, like, are we afraid of the dark days coming back? Because if you have one or two bad underage crops, it mightn't come through too well. So definitely that's a concern.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, and we wish them the very best of luck going forward. Of course, congratulations to Cork being in an All-Ireland final. Jimmy Barry Murphy, terrific job with a very young and inexperienced team, but an All-Ireland final awaits them.
Just before we put the weekend to bed, just a quick mention for the Waterford Miners, who've booked a place in our first All-Ireland final since 1992. We're talking about Kilkenny teams being regular in minor Leinster finals and everything else. These Waterford lads have really worked hard, and it's the fruits of good work, I suppose, by the likes of Dungarvan Colleges, who got to 2 All-Ireland finals earlier this year, and also tremendous work being put in right by everybody in Waterford. I know we're going to talk about a moot point for Waterford in a few minutes' time, but this has to be mentioned because it was a huge positive, some excellent players, and a huge monkey off the back, and for me, the real All-Ireland contenders now.
And on that point, just to show the dedication of Waterford fans, my flatmate was in a terribly hungover state but still got up to watch that game.
Towards the end of the game, Colleen, I was in watching this one. I thought that both teams were doing everything they can not to win the match, and it was just the good work that Waterford had done early on in the game seemed to just pay off, because there was a lot of wides towards the end.
Yeah, I was there myself, sitting up in the Hogan stand watching on and taking notes, doing a report on it, and I was just thinking, wide after wide after wide. And of course, it had come with 2 sendings off late on as well. We mentioned how the sending off was contentious in the senior game, and there was a sending off on each side in the minor game as well. But some excellent scores. I mean, the goals, I mean, go on to YouTube, watch them, because there's something else. And that's the one thing about minors that I love. There's this abandon about them that we don't care. We're just out here to play hurling. And, you know, there's nothing cynical really in the minor game, and long may that continue. It was an excellent game of hurling to watch, really, on what was a super day of hurling. I have to say, having gone to Croke Park nearly every day there's been a game in Croke Park over the last 10 years since I started out in journalism, and even before that, I haven't seen a day quite like it. Some drama aplenty. And we've already been seeing how great the hurling championship has been this summer. That senior game has to stand out as the game of not just the summer, but of the decade. And the minor game will certainly offer plenty of drama as well.
Yeah, and hopefully now the match that we have to come to find out the second All-Ireland finalist will be equally as good. We've got Munster champions Limerick going up against Clare. Now, Colleen, is there a possibility that Limerick won't have the same momentum that Clare will have coming through here? Because if you look at it, Limerick, they won the Munster title, deservedly so. However, there is that little bit of a break. Will that affect them?
Well, you would have said that maybe about Dublin as well, and I don't think it affected them last weekend. But will we see two provincial champions knocked out in the space of 2 weekends? We possibly will. Limerick have been lucky. They haven't had really too many injuries. They've also been playing a lot of club championship of late, something which the Dubs actually hadn't done. Anthony Daly had full access to his players, but maybe it's very hard to say if anything caught up in Dublin in the end. Only a late Cork goal and a sending off, maybe, because there was nothing separating those sides last weekend. But looking ahead to Limerick and their gap, I don't think it's going to be a huge problem. I put this question to John Allen last week when I was in Limerick, and we were talking about how there was no injuries, no fresh injury concerns. Everyone came through club championship unscathed, and that was the way he wanted. You know, players back with their clubs, get a bit of action under their belt, you know, keep them fresh. And, you know, that's one thing that's really hugely standing in Limerick's favour, I suppose. One thing maybe that might go against him slightly is the hype Shannon side is something else. And what's even worse, again, the hype's probably even greater because of the fact that it's their neighbours just right over the border. I mean, yeah, there's so many players that live within a puck of the ball, so to speak, of either county, and then they know each other so well. A lot of them have gone to college together and everything else. But I suppose there's one interesting statistic here. The average age of this Clare panel is 23. The Clare under 21s obviously won their Munster title against Tipperary last week, and 18 of those players are on the Clare senior panel. Out of 30 players, 18 of them are under 21, and they're in an All-Ireland semi-final. That's just immense. That's the statistic of the summer, really, for me so far.
It really is, Colleen. And Emmett, just to put a point on this to you, Colleen's talking about the hype. We've seen the scenes when Limerick won the Munster title in the Gaelic grounds. It was really unbelievable. Clare have gone about their business nicely. We've seen them winning in their Tipperary-like away strip, and then again over Galway as well. So Clare have perhaps gone about their business nicely. Do you think the hype could run against Limerick, perhaps?
It's kind of hard to say. Like, obviously, there's more pressure on Limerick to win this game than Clare, but I don't think it's really going to play a factor in how the game is played. And that part of that actually is down to the game just played last Sunday. When you're playing the second All-Ireland semi, there is kind of the pressure taken off because you've sort of seen what the other guys have gone through. Like, so you're not thinking so much about the occasion to the same extent because there isn't that the long wait and build up isn't quite the same. It is obviously your game you're focused on, but sort of like that point of sort of the game for the All Ireland final, the first one's already been played, so kind of you're in the other play in game. So that allows you to stay a little bit under the radar as well, because the hype for hurling the last few weeks hasn't been over Limerick Clare, it was over Dublin and Cork, because naturally you had back-to-back weekends of Dublin and Cork in both codes, certainly helps. So obviously, internally in Limerick and Clare, like, I'm sure the Limerick guys hear nothing about this, but about this game every day of the week, every hour of the day. Well, I doubt it's any different if you're a Clare County player, no matter how young or old you are. Like, I know 18 under 21 is an extraordinary number, but like, if anything, they're hearing even more about it, like, because they'd be more clued into like sort of social side of things, you know, and they'd have more reasons to be out and about, shall we say. I don't think the pressure is any different on either panel, because both panels know that you don't get that many chances to win an All-Ireland in your career if you're not from Kent. There'll be a bit, you know, coarse about it. But, you know, the Limerick are thinking, well, we had two very close runs in the mid-90s. We haven't really come close since, apart from obviously that one final they had where they got beaten fairly handy. It's like a case of, Limerick are thinking, let's not mess this up. And it's nothing about the occasion. Let's just get the job done. I think it's Clare thinking the exact same. So for me, this is a total, toss-up game. it could really go either way. My gut's saying Limerick, but it's really just down to the fact that they haven't lost yet this year. But like the way they lost the league final, the Willoughby final, does leave me a little worried, because I was pretty convinced they're going to beat Dublin based on where I thought Dublin were weak. Limerick weren't smart enough to open them up that day. Now, they've been very smart in the championship all season, but like, you know, if they have one more day where they just their brains lapse briefly on certain areas, that would obviously be a huge advantage to Clare.
Okay, and Colleen, your prediction on this match, of course, Emmett says it is a very difficult match to call, but who are you going for?
Limerick have matured an awful lot as a group of players, I think, since that league final defeat that Emmett alluded to, whereas Dublin remained constant. I suppose you touched on Clare's last two victories, and I touched earlier on their one against Laois. I was down in Cusick Park in Ennis that day, and you know, they obliterated Laois, and a Laois team that's the best Laois team we've probably seen since the 1980s, the last time Laois got to a Leinster final. I think that Clare may sneak this one. I was coming into last Sunday's game saying it was going to be a draw. We mentioned the stats that it was level on 15 times. I was almost right. I think this game will be close in nature as well. I think we're due another draw in an All-Ireland semi-final. We haven't had one, I think, since 2003. It's going to be interesting. This is a neighbourly battle. This is like a Munster Championship game being played in Croke Park. And we were talking about nerves and gaps and everything else. I think one thing that's going to settle the two teams is the fact that they know each other so well, that they've played each other so often as well in the past. And, you know, that can only stand to them and alleviate some of the pressure that goes into a big game like an All-Ireland semi-final in Croke Park. To be honest, there's nothing really on both sides of this game that would sway me one side or the other. I mean, Limerick are fully deserving of being there. They're a great team, done well in Munster, obliterated everybody. Clare, on the other hand, have built up momentum in recent weeks. With the 18 under-21s on board, there's that momentum carrying through. All inter-county players, all club players will tell you that they love nothing more than playing games. And that's what both counties have got in recent weeks. Clare in terms of their under-21s and the momentum of coming through the qualifiers. Limerick in terms of that club championship action that I mentioned. I'm sitting on the fence in this one.
Yeah, okay, no problem.
What it'll start to bring up actually, Dave.
Yeah.
I think Colin can correct me on this. But definitely when it comes to when we leave out the relegation type matches, Colin. Apparently, yes. 1997 was the last time a county beat another county twice in the one summer, which...
Possibly, yeah.
Which would mean that Cork really want Limerick to win this game on Sunday, because Cork, of course, beat Clare, but, you know, Limerick beat Cork, so...
Well, one thing I would love to see happen this weekend, and I suppose with the four semi-finalists that we had, there's always going to be some intrigue. Was Anthony Daly going to end up against Davy Fitz in the All-Ireland final, and Dublin versus Clare and the two Clare guys, pals of the 90s, so to speak? And indeed, Anthony Daly, if you like, managed Fitzy for a couple of years while he was manager of Clare. Then you've got John Allen with the potential of coming up against his own county, a county that he managed to their last All-Ireland title success. And then if you look, and if Clare beat Limerick, Anthony Daly might be giving Davy Fitz a bit of advice to try and get one over Cork after Dublin losing to Cork in that All-Ireland semi-final. So it's just an intriguing championship. I mean, you know, you just couldn't ask for more. And that's the beauty of hurling, that while at the top level it may be played by a smaller number of counties, you've got more... It's more incestual, if you like.
I was going to say, that sounds pretty incestuous the way you're going there.
I didn't want to use that word, but I've used it now, so I'll stick with it. But
okay. You do it. Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, well,
it just adds to the intrigue. And I mean, if you were down in Limerick or Clare this week, there's nothing else being talked about, and there's lads slagging each other over the border and everything else, and that manifests itself right through to the pitch and the text messages among the players and the tweets and the Facebook and all that as well. Like, in football sense, you just won't have that as much. But, you know, there's nothing beats being there, as the GA slogan last year.
So long as he opened the upper tier, he's being there, Coley.
What?
So long as he opened the upper tier, nothing beats being there. That's a key qualifier I feel needs to always be added on.
Yeah, well, the upper tier in the Hogan in the middle, is that what you're talking about?
I mean, upper tier Hogan or Cusick, like the number of games
so, where because meant so long as they open the press box, but I
best seats are in the upper decks in Croker. I hate the early stage of the championship when they're closed.
Well, in fairness, I don't think there's any bad seat in Croker.
Possibly a fair point. A fair
you
point.
You need to be in the front row of the Hogan. Anyway,
we really need to get onto the Waterford management story. I think.
I know.
Well, I have to say, Colleen, thanks a million. There, it was a real merging roller coaster of statistics. There, fantastic altogether. Now, one of the things just before we wrap the show up, Colleen, I think we have to talk a little bit about Michael Ryan. He stepped down as manager of Waterford Senior Hurlers. He served 2 years in charge of the Dacia. And Waterford exited this year's championship in a terrific clash with Kilkenny in the qualifiers in July. Colleen, he did a good job. Now, he informed, I think, the Waterford County Board that he didn't want to continue. He wasn't looking to extend his future. A blow for Waterford.
A blow of sorts for Waterford. He also informed Oisin Langan from News Talk that he didn't want to make any further comment on stepping down, and we all respect that as members of the media as well. But I have to say, before I talk about his hurling prowess, Michael Ryan, to me, as a youngster, if you like, in the early 90s, first came into my sights as manager of the Waterford ladies football team, a Waterford ladies football team that had been doing tremendously in terms of All-Ireland successes in the late 80s and early to mid 90s as well. And I tweeted on Sunday when I heard he'd stepped down that hopefully he'll go back to Waterford ladies football, because they're playing at intermediate level at the moment and they really need a kick. They're one of the traditional powerhouses of ladies football, but in the last couple of years it hasn't been going their way. But in terms of Michael Ryan and the Hurlers, there was a tough act to follow, I suppose, there after Davy Fitz. Then losing John Milan, Dan Shanahan. Will John Milan be back? Will Dan the Man be back? Who knows? I saw John up in the press box on Sunday broadcasting when the Waterford Miners were playing, and that bodes well for the future. Waterford have some excellent hurlers. I'm lucky enough, I suppose, to have seen an awful lot of third level colleges games over the last couple of years, and Waterford IT, with a lot of Waterford based hurlers as well, have been doing tremendously. You know, these Waterford guys are itching for something. They've got their Munster medals, I suppose, and that was one monkey put to bed, but they really deserve an All-Ireland. I hate talking about teams deserving of All-Ireland medals, you know. I mean, you have to earn them as well, and if you do end up winning one, you know, it's the result of hard work also, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, one of the most interesting things for me out of the whole Michael Ryan story at the weekend was that Donal Cusack has been linked with the position. I'm sure the Sunday game would love if he wasn't managing any teams next year, so that they could get another bit out of him, because they've certainly got the worst out of him this summer already, and we're not even at the final. But it's just an intriguing story. I saw Brian Flannery, the former Waterford hurler, tweeting earlier on that this evening there's a three-man committee setting out on the journey of trying to appoint Ryan's successor. It's a plum job. Whoever wants it. If Davy Fitzgerald doesn't want to manage Carlow and he's gone from Clare this year, I'm sure they'd welcome him back in Waterford.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Thank you, Carlow, for this is all I'm saying. Like, you know, but anyway, like, I love the rest of Rastafarian County, don't worry. But looking at Ryan and Waterford, the thing is, it did seem he didn't really have the support internally from his panel at this point to keep going. And I don't put the blame on Ryan really for it. I think that's part of the nature of a county that's in transition. Because clearly Waterford have a good young generation coming through, as Colleen alluded to there. But like, they are still trying to move on from what is a pretty aging lineup. Like, there's no question there when it comes to a lot of their players. And that's always going to lead to some strife for whoever the poor schmo who gets the manager's job for those couple of years is. So I think Ryan sort of had the misfortune of being the guy who was given the gig when Waterford were going through the transitional phase. The next manager might also suffer through a transitional phase as well, but If you can hang in for 3 years, he's probably going to see some results come through.
Yeah, Emmett, they had a kind of a bit of a bizarre topsy-turvy championship, ending up with that cracking game against Kilkenny. I mean, they were away to Westmead and everything in the qualifiers, and they were ticking away without blowing teams out of the water, but it really made for a fantastic clash, which went to extra time with Kilkenny when they finally got undone by the genius. It was an interesting championship for them.
It was, but I think as well, a lot of the players felt that like the Kilkenny game was a game they really could have won. Like, Kilkenny made enough mistakes for them to do it, and they're probably thinking that they might need it. Again, I think it isn't just down to that one game this one season. I think a lot of it is down to the fact that Waterford are in transition, like that they are trying to bring this new generation through while basically trying to get the guys who've made Waterford a force over the late 90s into the 2000s and sort of move them off to pasture, for want of a better way of putting it.
Yeah, we wish them the very best of luck. And as Colleen says, that three-man panel that's going to appoint Ryan's successor, we hope that they get the right man for the job and bring back Waterford Hurling, which no doubt they will. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here on Talking GAA, and really insightful show, there's no doubt about that. I suppose that's what you get when we are at these stages in the Hurling Championship. It really is electric. My thanks to freelance GAA correspondent Colleen Duffy and Emmett Ryan off Action81.com. Lads, thanks a million for joining me, and we'll look forward to chatting to you both again very, very soon.
No worries, Dave. Thanks.
No problem at all.